Welcome to Ladies Night Home Concerts Artist Chat Podcast number 6. We will be chatting with Kelly Suttonfield, an amazing jazz singer from New York City. Here we go.
Hello, Kelly.
Hello. You made it.
This is Julie, and we're on our Ladies Night Home Concert Artist Chat.
Happy to be here.
We're so excited to talk to you today. Tell us now, where are you located?
New York, New York.
New York, New York. It's a fabulous place.
It certainly is.
We're going to ask you a couple things. I wanted to know, I wanted you just to tell us about your kind of like journey when you knew that you had music inside of you and that you had this, and can I say, most amazing voice.
Oh my goodness, that's a long story, but I'll try to encapsulate it for you.
Sure.
So, yes, I live in New York City, Manhattan. And I've lived here for quite a number of years now. But originally, I am from small town Virginia, from the land of churches and beauty parlors, I like to say.
Land of church and beauty parlors. Okay, that is amazing visual. When that would make a great song, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for somebody. My indoctrination into music was, of course, my exposure to it in the church. I remember being really small and, you know, just thinking, well, there are two aspects about church that I like. My grandfather was a minister, although he didn't live in the same town when I was growing up. We would try to go to church wherever he was. And then there was the music. So as far as I was concerned, in my little child mind, on Sundays, I got to go hear my grandfather, who I adored, to tell some interesting stories, and I got to sing.
And that was a win-win.
Yeah. And I was also a little precocious when I was younger. The whole rest of the world is caught up to me by now, but I read at an early age, and I seemed to understand music at an early age. And I would be sort of singing things correctly and pointing things out to people that they weren't doing correctly, and then not really realizing. I thought I was helping, right? Not realizing how this could come across.
So not everyone appreciated an 8-year-old telling them how to sing?
It was more like, it was a little younger than that. I think in the beginning people thought it was cute. But that wore thin pretty fast. So my mother decided when I was 6 years old to have me start working on piano. So that's really where I started to learn about technique and real performance.
Uh-huh.
And that I thought was going to be my path for a long time. I was, kind of advanced at a young age, and I went on to win a couple of state piano competitions for classical music.
Okay.
And that just, I think what happened is puberty. And
yeah. It's an amazing thing, puberty.
It affects you in all kinds of ways.
There's a couple of words we could use for it, but yes, we'll stick with amazing.
Yeah. So I didn't really want to be playing such an isolated instrument at that time of my life. I wanted to be out playing kickball in the front yard. And I wanted socializing.
Yeah.
That evolved into theater and musical theater, and that's kind of where singing got a little bit more developed. But at that point, it was really just for my own entertainment, because people around me really didn't enjoy my singing. So, and would not hesitate to tell me so, and in just, you know, a few words. So, you know, that continued for a while. It continued through, I guess, college. I got a partial scholarship for theater in college. And then got out of college, you know, of course, you know, what do I do with these 2 degrees in theater and psychology? And now here I am in New York City. I guess I better focus on just surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the music and everything got totally put aside for quite a number of years. And I didn't even realize I was missing it.
Wow.
I was doing some big soul searching and I was confiding in someone and they said, you know, you're a very creative person, but I don't see anything that you're doing creatively in your life right now. What would you like to do? And I said, oh, that's the answer. Okay. So I turned back to singing and started to study in a community music school. I started to study techniques, first time I ever studied vocal technique.
Uh-huh.
And they had me set for a classical singer path.
They had you set for what?
A classical singer.
Okay.
Classical singer / moving on into opera. This is the direction that they got very excited about. And, you know, I was going through all the motions and I was doing it. And,
well, you have the chops for it.
Whoa, not to be an opera singer, and certainly not so much these days because I've developed a different sound.
Yeah,
and that took a long time, and now that sound is very natural to me, and I think most people think it's a little bit unique. It's not for everyone,
right?
But it's working for me, and I'm going to stick with it and do what I can to preserve it and develop it.
Yeah, well, when you make it look easy, you know you're doing something right, because I know it's not.
It's not easy. Nothing is easy. You know, it's worth fighting for. So this just
your next song.
Yeah, that's right.
You're absolutely right. You are so quotable today. I just have to tell you, Kelly.
I think it's because I'm talking so much.
So jazz, that's kind of, tell me a little about your genre, like where you fit in there.
Right. So I started singing professionally about what years? I would say like about 12 years ago, and I was really at that time. When I say professionally, I mean out in public, in the big scary world of New York City, and getting paid for it. Not very much,
right.
But I'm getting
right.
paid for it.
Right.
So, and I was, you know, all bent on being a jazz singer. It was a whole new world to me, and I was just a little sponge soaking up everything. And,
right.
Different vocalists that I admired and emulated, and you know, learning new jazz standards every week, learning blues heads, learning whatever I could possibly learn. My life was pretty open at that time, so I had this extra to do that, and I had the interest and the motivation. So since then, in addition to developing my sound and my, you know, technique and my performance and all of this, I've always been very selective about the material that I choose. Some of it is off the beaten path a little bit, some of it's obscure. Most of it is relatable to my audience. Or I think that it will be after I sing it a couple of times. And, yeah, that's the hope anyway. So
how do you take a classic song and make it yours?
Right. That's the trick.
Yeah. You know,
in the jazz world, you're either singing a jazz song and giving it sort of a modern twist, or you're singing a modern song and giving it a jazz twist. That's the two areas I float back and forth.
Gotcha.
And that's basically the arrangement luckily I had this musical foundation, so I can hear arrangements or at least have some sort of idea going into it of something that I want to develop. Mm-hmm. Also, another thing that I do, and I did this as a kid when I played piano, I would take a really fast up-tempo tune and slow it down and make it a beautiful ballad. Because that's the speed many singers like to be at, is the slow, emotive pace, at least in the jazz singer world.
Right, right. Yeah, I think tempo probably has just a lot. I mean, tempo's a big thing when you're talking about what you're doing.
Tempo is a big thing, and also I think everyone sort of has their core tempo.
Okay.
Or a range. This is just my own opinion. I'm not an expert on tempos at all. But, you know, it's a space where you feel comfortable playing your own natural rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess where I was going with this is that, so jazz, you know, the development of choices in myself and also developing along with the community and the world of jazz, it's become a lot more all-encompassing. If you go to a jazz performance, you don't necessarily see someone playing, all of me or all of Blackbird. You can hear a classical composition that somebody has set words to and is using a jazz instrument. You can hear jazz that's not swinging, like what I just described.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an area where I think is also just wide open at this point, and it confuses people. It allows a new audience to become more engaged, and it allows some of the traditional audience, well, it doesn't allow them, but it's alienating for them sometimes.
Well, I think some people feel like if they don't know very much about jazz, then they're not going to get it, or somehow they're not worthy to go to a jazz club or something like that. Like they feel like they need to be carded to see if they're like a jazz aficionado, you know?
Well, it's a little bit of an acquired taste, like beer or wine or something like that.
Yeah.
You may not really enjoy it or appreciate it at the first try, but, you know, if you keep going back to it, you can experience different things. You know, I had a person come to see me perform. This was just a small duo gig that I had. And I knew when she walked in the door there was going to be some issues. She walked in the door with her entourage, and she was just, you know, singing my praises. Oh, we're going to have a wonderful night. We're listening to jazz. And I was like, oh, okay. So, of course, I could hear them talking throughout the whole performance. And, you know,
that's not distracting, is it?
Not at all. Midway through, I hear her say, this isn't jazz. I don't know what this is, but it's not jazz. And so, you know, we just kept going. And then afterwards, she told me she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
She never come back. But I asked her, who are the jazz singers that she really likes to hear?
Yeah.
And the people that she mentioned were not even considered by today's singers jazz singers. They're cabaret singers.
Cabaret.
So, yeah.
Yeah, which is a whole different genre.
There is a lot of crossover. And
but it's different.
You can have a leg in both worlds,
Okay.
And it also, the definition does vary depending on where you're located. And cabaret in Europe is something entirely different.
Mm.
Cabaret in New York is a pretty set mentality for cabaret in New York. And also there are jazz and cabaret rooms combined here in New York. So there's that potential. You can bring a cabaret audience to a jazz show and they may appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
You bring a jazz audience to a cabaret show, it may not be the same result, depending on the show and, you know, their knowledge and their presence.
Right, right. Well, I want to make sure that we get in about what you are doing. You've got some new projects. I know your last your last CD did great, got great reviews among the stars. I know I loved it.
Thank you.
But tell us what you're working on.
Sure, sure. I just went into the studio last month and began recording my third CD, which I'm very, very excited about. I haven't really shared the concept with a lot of people just yet, but it's going to get out there sooner or later. So the guitarist that I work with for a long time now, I told him I had this idea, and he was completely on board with it and also said he wanted to produce it, which is a tremendous miracle. And, of course, I said yes.
Yeah.
And so we've been working on this for, you know, quite a few months, you know, meeting, having, you know, duo rehearsals to sort of map everything out. And, you know, it's starting to come to fruition. Basically, we've identified 13 songs that are written but not necessarily performed by Neil Young. And we have made...
They're all Neil Young?
They're all Neil Young.
Wow. Wow, wow,
yeah.
Wow. That is cool.
So, yeah, I think the audience for this is going to be sort of a jazz pop audience.
So it's Neil Young on jazz.
Yeah.
That's going to be amazing.
I'm pretty excited about it. I really am. I can't quite believe it. You know, I'm sitting here pinching myself. It's a huge undertaking, but it's finally, you know, coming together.
Yeah. Yeah, so you've started it, and you're kind of getting in the groove and seeing this is going to really work.
Oh, it's going to work. I mean, we've committed and passed that line a long time ago. It just takes, it's so many stages in making a production.
Right.
And we have, you know, some special instruments on this, so we had to do the recording in stages, and
right,
and we're not even done with that, so
it takes a while. You're building something, and you know, all your layers, it's important.
Exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately,
it takes a lot of money.
Yeah.
There's that, exactly.
The money is just a flowing.
Yeah, I don't know where that money is coming from.
Yeah. I'm just like, so for people that think that they should have their music for free, I'm like, well, then why can't I make it for free? Because that would be really great.
Yes, it would be great. The record companies get to make it for free because lately
you
have to deliver them a finished product.
There you go. Boom. So, what, tell us something that about you that would surprise people.
I was hoping we would skip over this question. I've given a few interviews before and I have bios out there, and I'm a pretty much an open book, and I feel like, you know, most people know everything about me.
Yeah.
So right before the call, I started reaching out to people saying, what's something about me that would surprise people? And I was getting all sorts of funny responses from people, one of which being that I can drink an Irishman under the table. And my response to that was, well, but everyone knows that.
Well, I didn't know that.
So we didn't really get too far in that question. But, you know, I found some interesting things in my travels. Went to Hawaii once and rode a horse down into a dormant volcano. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I was in an NBC. I was a featured extra in an NBC miniseries a long time ago. Playing a woman of the evening.
You're in an NBC miniseries?
Yes, I was. That was when I was acting.
Ah, your other.
Not performing. Excellent, yes.
Okay. Your other life, yeah. Well, that's kind of a cool trivia information.
Fun fact.
I got another question for you. What was your favorite gig last year?
Oh, that is a good question, and it also involves travel. You know, I like non-traditional things. I like the traditional concert settings, of course, but I had the opportunity to travel to Spain and Denmark last year. And the Spain gigs were all in you know, small venues, you know, drinking establishments, eating establishments. And the best part about that is I met some incredible musicians, and I hope to be able to return there and play with them. In December, I went to Copenhagen, and I have very dear friends that live there, and I put on a house concert there, which I know is of interest to you.
Yeah.
And that was a really fun event. It's a little bit of a tough sell because of the cultural differences. No one had ever heard of a house concert.
Yeah.
They didn't really know what to expect. A lot of the onus was on me, but after it was all said and done, we had a great time. They want me to come back and do it every year. And again, I met incredible musicians that I hope to play with again. So it's all good.
Yeah, I know there's places in Europe where house concerts are just like really, really big, very big. They're way ahead of us in that department.
Yes, and we should chat about that.
Yes, we should chat about that. So tell us a little bit about how you get ready to do a show.
I may not be the best one to ask about that. I am a bit of a planner, so I like to plan out set lists in advance. I like to plan gigs. Kind of close together, so if I have to schedule a rehearsal, it's good for both gigs. But that's dicey these days. It depends on where the gig is. If they're two competing venues in Manhattan, I can't do that. But leading up to the days of a performance, it's a little manic, and I don't enjoy it. The worst part of it is all the papers, and I'm trying very hard.
The worst part of it is what?
The paper. The paper. I've got books. Yeah, books and reams of songs and organizing, putting all the books in order for all the musicians.
Yeah.
I'm trying very hard to get everyone to convert over to iPad, but it's not really a perfect solution. So
yeah.
Here we stay with the books. But the day of the gig, I'm running around. Getting it ready personally with, clothing and hair and makeup and whatever. And then, people are calling me, what time is the gig? All these distracting things. And then I've got to sit there and collate songs and put them into notebooks for 1 to 2 hours at least.
Yeah.
And that is just a big, it's not the best use of my time. It sort of drains my energy a little bit.
Well, I always panic right before, and I think, I forgot how to play the guitar. Oh, I forgot how to sing. I don't know any of these songs. I can't remember the words.
It's right.
I go through a total panic.
Yes, I have done that, and I have had some panic, in front of people. I think, though, the more you do it, the more you just realize the panic is part of the process, and you just hear this little voice and say, oh, that's panic. Just get off to the side. I'm busy doing this other thing.
Well, I think some of that, too, I kind of just remind myself that I like that adrenaline. I like the fear of dying. Maybe that helps. Maybe this is why I do this. I don't know. And then people are like, you look so composed up there, Julie. You've got it all under control. I'm thinking, you have no idea.
Well, that's great that people don't see it. I mean, I've had a couple of moments where people have actually seen it. And, you look uncomfortable, then they feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So,
but they also, I think they can connect the fact that this is real, you know, and you're a person.
Well, yes. And that is the part of the panic and the about being prepared that I actually use in performance, because if everything is too set and too pat, it's not engaging. But if there's little moments where I'm looking at a musician, if I look at a musician and say with my eyes, you know, I'm going to sing this verse one more time, or are you going to take this verse? And it's a little tentative, and you can see a dialogue going on there.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, you are one of our artists, and people can go to our website. We want everyone to go to your profile on our website, and also to your website, which is
KellySuttonfield.com. That's KellySuttonfield.com.
If they are not familiar with your singing, they're just going to be in for a total treat. And and you are performing, if they're on the East Coast, you perform, and they can find what your gigs are. Go to your website and see where you're going to be at, and then they have the amazing opportunity to have someone of your caliber in their home, like in their living room, raising the roof, I would say. And
that's right.
And so we want to encourage everybody to come and look at that. Bring your friends together, have a amazing, memorable moment. There's nothing that's really more intimate, and that's what you're talking about, the humanity of it and the connection. And there's no better way to get that than in a quiet home where people are listening.
Right.
There's nobody
there
clanking glasses. There's nobody talking in the background. There's no one screaming, "Hey, baby."
Right.
So, thank you so much. Anything else you want to add, Kelly?
Well, just real quick, a plug. Thursday, May 12th at the Kitano in New York City. And some other things are coming up, but the next big date is Monday, June 13th at the Pheasant Tree in London. And we're very excited about that.
Excellent. Yes. That was important. I knew I was missing something. Plugging your upcoming gigs. And they're also up on your website, I would suspect.
Oh, yes. And, you know, anyone who, finds me online, you know, please feel free to connect with me in any form of social media, Facebook, Instagram. I'm on Instagram now. Having a good time there. Twitter, too. Mailing list.
You have a great newsletter that goes out. You're very able to link up with and talk personally. We have your email address on our profile. People can come over and just drop you a line. And like I said, you're very approachable, and you love and appreciate your fans and connect with them. And so it's a good deal.
Thank you. Thank you for all that, and thank you for this time with you just now. It's been great.
Oh, well, we love it. And take care, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Julie.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening, and please check out ladieshomeconcerts.com to learn more about our artists and how you can support them and how you can host us a Ladies' Night home concert. This is Julie Clark Schubert encouraging you to dream it, live it, and share it.